Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. On today's show, we'll have interviews from local protest movements that have only recently begun to overlap in membership, the anti-tar sands megalode protests, and the Occupy Moscow and Occupy the Palouse movements. But first, we have these headlines.
By the International News Net.
Loukas Papademos has been sworn in as new Prime Minister of Greece following a power-sharing deal by political leaders. The interim government will be entrusted with imposing crippling austerity measures to secure continued bailout funds from Eurozone partners and the International Monetary Fund. Papademos, a former European Central Bank Vice President, said of Greece's future, "We must all be optimistic."
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said Thursday, military action against Iran's nuclear program could have unintended consequences and ought to be a, quote, last resort. Panetta said he agreed with earlier assessments that a strike would only set Iran's nuclear program back by 3 years at most, adding the military action could fail to deter Iran and also have unintended consequences for other countries and U.S. forces in the region.
The Energy Department warned Thursday shale gas drillers and their regulators must improve efforts to protect public health and the environment or risk a public backlash that stifles further development. The Shale Gas Subcommittee called on the Environmental Protection Agency to include limits on methane in a proposed rule on air emissions and criticized the agency for hindering efforts to get better data from the oil and gas industry.
A new report from the nonpartisan group Common Cause shows the natural gas industry pumped $747 million in campaign contributions to Congress to stifle regulation of hydraulic fracturing in the past 10 years. Fracking is the method of obtaining natural gas by injecting sand, radioactive chemicals, and water into a well at high pressure. Contributions heavily favored members of Congress who voted for the 2005 Energy Policy Act, which exempted fracking from regulation. Lawmakers who voted for the bill received an average of over $73,000. Those who voted against received just $11,000. Common Cause President Bob Edgar said, quote, "Players in this industry have pumped cash into Congress in the same way they have pumped toxic chemicals into underground rock."
Britain is backing a U.S.-led plan to torpedo the global ban on cluster bombs. In recent years, the U.K. has played a leading role in trying to rid the world of such bombs. But the U.K. Independent has learned Britain is supporting a U.S. proposal that would permit the use of cluster bombs manufactured after 1980. The international community is gathering in Geneva next week to discuss the proposal, which will be tabled as a new protocol for the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons. The world's major cluster bomb manufacturers, including the US, Israel, Russia, China, South Korea, India, and Pakistan, have refused to sign the convention.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
We now have this regional news. Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar released a report yesterday saying the Obama administration is seeking the creation of 18 new wilderness and conservation areas in western states. The list, which is part of the America's Great Outdoors Initiative, includes 406,000 acres of wilderness and conservation area on the shores of the Missouri River in Montana. Other areas would include the San Juan Islands National Conservation Area in western Washington and protections for the Rio Grande del Norte in New Mexico. America's Great Outdoors Initiative is a plan in which representatives of all 50 states were asked to identify conservation projects protecting public land and encouraging recreation to bolster tourism and recreation employment. Most of the protected land would be on Bureau of Land Management acres. BLM Director Bob Abbey said resource development and resource protection go hand in hand and, in fact, are part of a proud bipartisan tradition on which I hope Congress will build. Republican U.S. Representative Denny Rehberg of Montana, a frequent opponent to conservation efforts, said, "Whether it's one bill that locks up a million acres or 100 bills that lock up 1,000 acres each, the end goal is the same. There are places in Montana that deserve protection, but we simply do not need bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. making those decisions. Land use decisions should be based on consensus with the local community, not the collaborative efforts of unelected bureaucrats and big money special interest groups." Secretary Salazar pointed out the proposal in Utah has the support of the county commissioners in the county where it's located. Salazar said, "The truth is, in the West, we have a proud bipartisan tradition of passing land conservation measures like this." The proposed new wilderness and conservation areas do not include any acres in Arizona, Wyoming, or Alaska. Book People owner and proprietor Robert Green has announced the sale of the landmark downtown bookstore to Carol Sperling. Green had announced his retirement on St. Patrick's Day this year, 30 years to the day after he opened the store on Main Street. He will remain manager until December 28th, which is exactly 11 years after the business moved across the street using a chain of volunteers to pass thousands of books across Main Street. Sperling has worked as a bookseller before. She managed Bruised Books in Pullman and worked at Old Harbor Books in Sitka, Alaska. She has a Master's of Literature from the University of Montana and a Bachelor's in French from the University of Idaho. She is currently Outreach Coordinator for the Moscow Food Co-op. Green's press release today said longtime Book People employee Betsy Dickow will continue to work under the new owner. Spokane Mayor Mary Verner is not ready to concede, even as the latest vote count last night shows her trailing challenger David Condon by 2,700 votes. There are 4,300 votes left to count in the city. No votes will be counted today because of the Veterans Day holiday, and the next vote count will be Monday. Meanwhile, some Spokane pundits can't make sense of an election that swung to the right for city government positions but seems to have swung a bit to the left for the Spokane Community Bill of Rights, otherwise known as Proposition 1. The Bill of Rights was trailing by 918 votes as of last night, but it did much better than expected. A more comprehensive Bill of Rights for the city was trounced at the polls 2 years ago with only 25% voting in favor. Although the Bill of Rights measure is associated with the left, the Northeast Spokane City Council District, which seems to have elected the most conservative member of the City Council this year, Mike Fagan, also gave Proposition 1 its biggest margin. If it passes, the measure would guarantee that corporate rights would be subordinate to individual rights, would give constitutional protections to workers, would guarantee the right of the Spokane River and the Spokane Valley Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer to be free of pollution and to flourish, and would give neighborhoods within the city the right to self-determination. Under the proposition, major zoning changes could not be made without voter approval within neighborhoods. Brad Reed, the president of Envision Spokane, which drew up and backed the Bill of Rights, said he was pleasantly shocked by the outcome of the election. Meanwhile, Republican-backed candidates in the ostensibly nonpartisan city races mostly won. Condon, who is leading the mayor's race with 52.4% of the vote, received $63,000 in campaign contributions from the state Republican Party. City Councilmember Steve Corker blamed Verner's poor showing after doing well in the August primary on the Otto Zem case. Police officer Carl F. Thompson Jr. was recently convicted of brutality in the death of disabled janitor Zem. Although the beating of Zem happened before Verner was mayor, some believe she should have solved the police department's long-time brutality problem during her term. In other Spokane City news, Police Chief Ann Kirkpatrick announced today her retirement will be effective January 2nd. Kirkpatrick announced her planned retirement over the summer, but did not announce a date at that time. She was not hired as police chief until after the killing of Otto Zem. A 29-year-old man is suing the city of Spokane Valley after he was paralyzed after being shot by Sheriff's Department employees working under contract with the city. The lawsuit by David J. Gliddens also names deputies Aaron Childress and Griffin Criswell. Gliddens was shot at his home as he went out the front door with a pellet gun in an effort to chase away a feral cat that had been coming to his house. The police then charged Glidden with two counts of assault on a police officer, even though the deputies were not injured or shot at by Glidden. Glidden was found not guilty by a jury. His attorney, Kyle Zeller, said police testified they ordered his client to drop the weapon, but, quote, basically it happened so quick that as he was starting to say it, that's when they started shooting. Sheriff Ozzie Nezovich defended his deputies, saying, a guy steps out and starts to point a gun at you, and it looks like a real gun. You don't have a lot of time. Glidden's attorney in the civil case, Ray Deary of Seattle, said Glidden did not know police had been called to his home after a report of a suicidal man who might have been armed. Deary said the two police were hiding at the opposite front corners of the house, which caused a crossfire that could have killed or injured the deputies. He said, if you're going to go to someone's house ostensibly to protect that person, and you think he might be upset, and you think he might be armed, what on earth are you doing hiding? It's essentially akin to an ambush. The Washington State Board of Education voted yesterday to increase high school graduation requirements by adding one more year of English and another half year of social studies. The new total needed for graduation will be 4 credits of English and 3 credits of social studies. The new requirements will be put into effect beginning with the class of 2016. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, after receiving hundreds of comments from concerned individuals and groups, is reviewing the letters about a $2 billion high-voltage power line in southern Wyoming and southern Idaho. The Gateway West transmission line is planned by Idaho Power and Rocky Mountain Power. It would cover about 1,150 miles and would carry power generated by wind and other sources to residents of both states. The Bureau of Land Management will study the comments and propose a route for the power line from the alternatives that have been offered so far. Another comment period will take place before a final decision is made. BLM spokesperson Beverly Gorney said the comments vary widely from support of the project to concern for the impact on property owners. Of the comments received so far, Gorney said, quote, they were what we anticipated for the most part. She added a final decision will not happen until next summer or fall because of the time it takes to write the proposal. The proposal will take into consideration all 350 to 400 comments received and future responses during the next comment period. A Wyoming group, the Northern Laramie Range Alliance, has taken the lead in the comment period by opposing one of the routes running through and next to the Laramie Range in southeastern Wyoming. Landowner Sharon Rodeman, who is a member of the group, said there is an existing power line corridor that could be followed rather than cutting a new path through her property. Rodeman said she knows that using her property and the property of others is due to the severe decline in sage-grouse habitat over the last 100 years. Speaking of the power companies, she said, quote, it's getting pushed on us because they can't go into the core sage-grouse area. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is on record saying sage-grouse deserves a threatened or endangered species designation, but the agency has delayed any declaration, citing other species in more urgent need of protection. The U.S. Department of Energy has reported an employee of the Idaho National Laboratory has received burns in a fire at one of its buildings today. The burned worker has been taken to the Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center in Idaho Falls. The Department of Energy said 10 other employees were evaluated on the scene and released. INL fire crews responded to the fire at the Materials and Fuels Complex, which is owned by the Idaho Cleanup Project. Officials say the fire is out. A DOE spokesperson has suggested the fire may have been caused by a sodium reaction. David Meister took the stand in his own retrial yesterday and denied that he killed Moscow resident Tonya Hart. when defense attorney Scott Chapman asked Meister if he killed Hart. In 2001, Meister quickly responded, "I did not." When Chapman asked Meister if he conspired with Jesse Linderman, who is thought by some officials to have hired Meister to kill his then-girlfriend Hart, Meister replied, "I did not." In 2002, Meister confessed to police that he murdered Hart, but shortly after, he recanted that confession. The next year, he was convicted of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder. The Idaho Supreme Court later vacated that conviction and ordered a new trial. Linderman was initially charged with conspiracy to kill Hart, but those charges were dropped after Meister recanted his confession. When Meister took the stand yesterday, he gave his account of the 2002 interrogation when he confessed, describing a small room at the Moscow Police Department and an aggressive Idaho State Police detective. Meister also went into details of his residency in Moscow, which included moving to Moscow from Bonner's Ferry in 2000 with high school friends, during which time he partied a lot and drank a lot of alcohol. After briefly moving back to his mother's home in Bonner's Ferry, he returned to Moscow with new employment at Pizza Pipeline. When asked how he procured a gun shortly before the death of Hart, Meister recalled that he bought a gun through co-worker Mike Garrison, partly because he was interested in becoming an illicit gun dealer himself, and partly out of curiosity. However, Meister said a few days after buying the High Point 9mm pistol, he sold the gun at a party to a man he didn't know and had never seen before. Police never recovered the murder weapon. Initially, in his confession that he later recanted, Meister said he hid the gun in a garbage receptacle while fleeing the murder scene. Yesterday, when asked about the day of the shooting, Meister said that he woke up at around 2 p.m., went to Pizza Pipeline to get food, and then went home. Later that day, he said he bought beer with a friend and drank and played dice at a friend's house until approximately 10:30 p.m. Hart was murdered at approximately 10:20 p.m. He then went to Papa John's to get pizza around 11 p.m., and when he returned home, a group of people had arrived and told him of the death of Hart. At the time of his confession, 9 months after the shooting, Meister said he was tired because of working two jobs while taking energy pills to stay awake. Meister said during the interrogation, which was played for the jury last week, State Police Detective Ed Westbrook told him that he could have an attorney present, but did not notify him that one would be provided if he could not afford one. Meister said he was nervous about being arrested for illegal gun ownership, so he first lied about the gun and later admitted to buying the gun and selling it before the shooting of Hart. The trial is stopped for the Veterans Day holiday and the weekend, and Meister will resume. The trial is stopped for the Veterans Day holiday and the weekend, and Meister will resume his testimony Monday morning. Portland Mayor Sam Adams yesterday ordered the Occupy Portland protesters to disband this weekend because of concerns over unhealthy conditions and an alleged attraction of drug users and thieves to the area. Occupy Portland is one of the largest Occupy Wall Street encampments in the country, and a faction of protesters vowed yesterday to resist any attempts to make them leave. Adams said the Occupy Wall Street protest in Portland has been linked to break-ins at local businesses, bike thefts, public drinking, and the smashing of a police car window. Adams said the final straw came this week when a protester was arrested on suspicion of setting a Molotov cocktail outside of an office building, as well as a drug overdose at the camp. Mayor Adams said the protesters must leave by midnight tomorrow, at which time police will shut down the two parks the protesters are occupying. Adams said all protesters who choose to remain in the park after tomorrow's deadline will be arrested. However, certain groups of protesters are preparing to resist the effort to evict them. Some are advocating that protesters fashion impromptu gas masks, avoid wearing contact lenses, and write an emergency legal aid number on their bodies for when they get arrested. An Occupy Portland volunteer facilitator, who identified herself as Adrian, said in a release, "Occupy is planning marches, a potluck, and other events tomorrow to bring people together in solidarity with the nonviolent humanitarian goals of Occupy." Adrian said, Whatever the whole group decides, everyone can go with whatever feels right to them, so long as it's peaceful and nonviolent. We now turn to our featured segment recorded yesterday by KRFP citizen journalist Josh Menney at the Occupy Moscow General Assembly held in Friendship Square and later at Mikey's Heroes, and last night's ExxonMobil tar sands shipment protests. The loads that went through Moscow towards Alberta last night were smaller than the largest split megloads that have gone through town, which have weighed up to 430,000 pounds each. The heaviest of the three loads last night was 140,000 pounds, but all three loads took up two lanes of US 95. We start with the Occupy Moscow audio.
Yeah, can you tell me, I mean, what is the overall reaction by Occupy Moscow to what's happening?
To what happened last night in Cal? Pretty upset, to say the least. I mean, I've watched multiple video clips of what occurred there last night, different angles, different sound bites, a little bit, and those students were literally attacked without provocation. They were definitely exercising their First Amendment right, their constitutionally protected right to peacefully assemble, petition their government for redress of wrongs, and they were just savaged. So that's very disturbing, I think, to see, you know, kind of knowing the level of control that corporations have taken over this country, that they also seem to be controlling what I fondly call the enforcers, the police and military, and they're using them against their citizens. These are people that are actually part of the 99%, and they're attacking others in the 99%, and literally violating our Constitution, I think. You know, they're acting quite illegally, so it's a little distressing, but, you know, you just kind of have to suck it up and remain peaceful. That's part of the whole point of being out here. You can't fight for peace and fight for change, as it were.
As far as I know, the committees in the General Assembly have a rolling structure. And so one of the things we'll be discussing tonight is possible events and activities, maybe some music event on a Saturday in the future or something that will kind of create a fun, festive atmosphere to bring people together, whether or not they are supporters of this movement right now, or if they're just interested or in the area, so that we can get a lot of people together, share some ideas, have fun, and then through that process of community building and some discussion of political issues from any area, actually affect the change we're trying to see by bringing people's participation back to the forefront rather than private interests and lobbies in a sub-political fashion.
Okay, so tomorrow we're doing Occupy Dads Weekend. It's going to start off, Saturday. Occupy Dads Weekend is going to start off 11 o'clock at Chase Bank in Pullman with Occupy Moscow and the Whitman Democrats. And then at 2 o'clock, just across the intersection at Cougar Plaza, we're going to have a General Assembly meeting so that we can talk about the protests later that evening in front of Martin Stadium. And then at 5:30 is when we're going to assemble in front of Martin Stadium, in front of the Cougar Pride statue. And the kickoff's at 7:30, so we're going to protest through the whole game.
So when the megaloads come through, are you going to be playing your tuba?
I don't know. Usually the police make us shut up, but that's usually because there's drummers and they're louder. So usually by now we'd have been shut down. I'd have been shut down by the police.
Is there some kind of like music or noise law where you can't have it past a certain hour?
Well, yeah. First, there's the past a certain hour, but then into more broad than that, the noise ordinance in Moscow. If there's any complaint at all, then the police can shut down. In fact, police can shut you down at their own discretion. So if they just don't like it, they can shut you down. So that's what they have done four times before when we've played down here. Police told us to shut up because they didn't like it. Or they claim there was complaints, but I don't really believe. I think police just shut down because police don't like music.
So do you predict you're going to get shut down tonight while you're playing music?
I don't know. They walked by a couple of times already and didn't tell me to shut up, so I don't know.
Down by the riverside, I'm on a poor old, by long back before I understood how horrible the tar sands were. I was holding a bridge sign on the bridge once that said, "Keep skilled jobs here." Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, grandma standing on a bridge with a sign that says, "Keep skilled jobs here." And I got people giving me the finger, people, you know. Mm. I don't think they even read the signs. They just yell, "Get a job."
Yeah.
Or hippie.
Right.
Oh, thank you.
And
I'm happy to identify with one of the most peaceful cultures in the world. And some of the hardest people, working people I know are hippies, so. I don't have a problem with that. Call me a hippie. I don't want to get too radical. But the thing is so old.
Yeah, if I may ask, I mean, yeah, what is your place in the community?
Oh, I actually live up out of Viola, and I'm a writer and a homemaker and a food grower for my family and for Backyard Harvest. I also work in international organizations, a lot of it from my computer in Viola, but I work with solar cooking. I help bring solar cooking to the third world. I'm part on the executive board of Solar Cookers International, and I've always been involved in the local community. And we moved to the Palouse in 76. We've been Idaho taxpayers since 1980. I'm outraged at what they're doing to the roads here.
Yeah.
I mean, and not to mention people's safety. There was an accident just last night. A tribal member was hurt. I don't know how badly. But a real run-in with one of the megaloads has finally happened, which I've seen them out there. They're not being as safe as they say. They're not using enough flag people. They're not directing traffic well. The lights are blinding. So I've been very involved in this struggle, both because I think when they get where they're going, they're going to kill millions of people, and they show no signs of caring who they kill on the way there.
Right. What exactly happened last night?
I wish I knew. I don't know if Helen might have more details by now. I just saw a little post on Facebook by a tribal member. And since it was last night and they weren't on the lower part of the road, I presume it might be Coeur d'Alene tribe or someone who was up there visiting.
Flip them off. All right. All right, so the megaloads are coming through, and seems to be nothing really... Megaloads are coming through. Seems to be three large pieces of equipment. And there's a lot of boos coming from the protesters. But no one has gone out in front of the megaloads, so... Just going through now, followed by an armada of police cars.
I see death, I see destruction, I see people's grandchildren being deformed up in Alberta, I see people dying of rare cancers up in Alberta, I see those horrible pipelines they want to put in filling up with poisons that can destroy our drinking water and our farmland. And it's all for a technology we really don't need anymore. We have alternatives now. We know how to pull carbon dioxide out of the air and turn it into fuel. There's no need to dig up more from under the earth anymore. It's just a matter of taking that money from the petroleum subsidies and putting it in the new technologies.
You've been listening to recordings made at last night's Occupy Moscow gathering and the Wild Idaho Rising Tide protests as three more ExxonMobil Alberta tar sands shipments traveled through Moscow. The segments were recorded by Josh Menny. That's it for this special edition of the KRFP Evening Report. If you want to help keep news reports like this on the air, plus the news you hear during Morning Mix, recordings of local events and public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Jim Roach, Ryan Phil, and Josh Menny assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great weekend.